Steve Bruce, defender, author, manager, and modern-day Renaissance man. 737 career appearances for United, Norwich, Gillingham, plus others. Managed every team who's ever come 16th in the Premier League. Now a Newcastle manager. Now Newcastle manager, plus author. But let's see what the book club thought of his 1994 autobiography, the beautifully named Heading for Victory, on this week's Football Book Club.
Imagine being in a state of shock that you could give birth for 2 months.
I just had time to scream to Janet, run, run, they've caught us.
I used to go on caravan holidays in Prestatyn, that's why I know. I reckon I've been in Steve Bruce's shop once upon a time.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less J.K. Rowling, more Stuart Downing. And thanks to Matthew Brazier for sending that one in.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
Hey, don't slag off our listeners.
No, genuinely, that was quite good. I liked
You're in
it.
A foul mood today, Jack.
I'm
worried
foul mood.
What you're going to say about this.
I wonder why.
And if you'd like to be insulted by Jack Bernhardt, send in on any of our social accounts your author / footballer combination. I'm James Buck, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Dean Windass's Dino and Steve Claridge's Beyond the Boot Counts. But today, we're reading Steve Bruce's 1994 autobiography, Heading for Victory. And reading it with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Balgen.
Hello.
So, Steve Bruce, obviously Newcastle manager, and I think we should stress this now, at time of recording.
It's really feeling like a matter of time, isn't it? It's really sad. Mm-hmm.
It could happen halfway through your list while you're listening to this episode. Yeah.
It might have happened a week ago.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, I've already been sacked. But aside from his managerial, the way things are going at Newcastle now, and what I didn't know was, I knew he'd written some books, but I didn't know quite how much of a prolific author Steve Bruce is. So, yeah. Right, for context, F. Scott Fitzgerald, who wrote The Great Gatsby, of course, wrote 4 books. Do you know how many books, stay with me, do you know how many books Steve Bruce has written? How many do you think?
Oh, I reckon he's done 7.
I'll go a bit higher, 10.
Oh,
he's got a series of fiction novels, hasn't he?
This is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I'll go 8.
You've all overshot 6, so that wasn't quite. But still, he's written 2 more books than F. Scott Fitzgerald. And as you mentioned, James, he famously wrote a trilogy of football crime novels. But this little number seems to have slipped under the radar a bit, and possibly for good reason. This is his debut novel about a subject.
Debut novel.
He's very familiar with himself. Basically describing his career up to 1994 when he was United captain. I feel like we already know Steve Bruce pretty well because he's been in our lives forever, right? In many ways.
Yeah.
He's been a player or a manager all our footballing supporting lives.
I suppose I do think of all of my the major events in my life and think, what's Steve Bruce doing right now?
Where was Steve Bruce managing
like,
at that time?
At my wedding, yeah. I was thinking, I hope Steve Bruce is enjoying this.
Where was Steve Bruce manager when you were getting married, Jack?
It was 2012, so he probably would have been, I guess, Sunderland manager or something. Yeah, Sunderland.
Wigan? Was he Wigan, maybe?
Maybe. Sunderland. I don't know if he was.
Or Hull. Maybe Hull. He's been around.
Oh, it was Hull. It was probably Hull, actually, wasn't it? Oh, he was doing quite well at Hull.
Got to the cup final. But anyway, like I say, we base our lives on Steve Bruce's manager. Very loosely. But there's a lot of stuff I still learned in this book. So let's go right back to the start of Steve Bruce's literary career, all the way to 1994. Also, generally, there's a bit where Steve Bruce almost gets framed for being a career criminal. So look forward to that. Okay, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and Ken is back with another song. But first, how are we all doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Tash, before we recorded, I hope this isn't betraying any kind of confidence, you told us about a tattoo you used to have.
Oh, James, how dare you?
this is a better conversation subject, I will say. Let's make the whole podcast about this. Yeah.
I had a very dodgy tattoo when I was about 17, and it was of a Billy Joel lyric, and I'm not telling you what lyric it was. I can't believe you've just outed me in public.
We're gonna find out.
This all came up because we were talking about the new podcast We Didn't Start the Fire with Tom Fordyce.
Available on Crowd Notebook.
tying it all in. So now we have to guess. So I reckon it was Harry Truman. I reckon that Tosh had Harry Truman written.
Do you want me to tell you where it was? And then maybe that will help narrow it down.
Okay.
Is it to do with the body part then, the lyric?
I don't know enough. It was here. And it was removed so long ago that the scars even faded. I'm pointing just under my arm.
Your bicep. Okay.
Yes. Yep. If I tell you it was very pretentious teenage lyric.
I've got it.
That might help.
Was it like...
And just for any rom-com fans out there, the reason that I got it was because of 13 Going on 30.
Oh, I have seen that film. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I've got a story about that. 13 Going on 30 is one of the most embarrassing film I've ever cried at.
I'm almost positive you've already told the story on this podcast.
On the podcast. I think I have. I have three stories. One that I saw Rio Ferdinand in Missoula, Shropshire. One that I cried at 13 going on 30. And I've got two stories. Tash, was the tattoo just all the way down your arm? Was it, whoa,
whoa. Yes, my thumb said Uptown Girl on it, but I'm glad that's gone now.
And where was Steve Bruce manager when you got this tattoo?
It was a long time ago. I think he was still playing.
We're not going to do Amazon reviews this week. It got 4.4 stars from about 16, but no one had done a very funny review. How rude. No one had done one this week. So instead, I'm going to have to ask four muggins what we thought of the book.
Should we say it in the style of a bad Amazon review?
Yeah, Jack, you can be Basel Boy. Basel Boy? What,
I bought this book for my dog. My dog did not enjoy it. 5 stars! There we go.
This book, I feel like if you looked at Steve Bruce, this would be the book that you would imagine would come out of that man. I know they say not to judge a book by the cover, but, you know, it's like a scotch pie of a book. It's got some good meaty bits in it, but it's surrounded by absolute tripe.
But I know very much what you mean. And when you say there's some meaty bits, the meaty bits are very few and far between.
So oh, very thin.
It's a cheap scotch pie, yeah.
Yeah, if you received this pie, you would almost certainly be taking it back and going like, more meat, please.
You munch your way through the gristle.
Yeah. That was going to be one of the Amazon reviews, isn't it?
James, you know, was it a good introduction to the man, the myth, the legend, Steve Bruce?
So I'm reluctant to go in too hard on little Steve Bruce because he's having such a hard time at the moment. And if he listens to this, and that's like, he's having, everyone is slating him, and then listens to this and we're just slagging off the book.
Do you think this will break him? This will be the final straw?
That is a very good point. Aww. So, guys, do this. I'll honor you on your best behavior.
Fairly.
Yeah, be nice. Let's be fair.
Okay.
Because we all do, that is true. We do all love Steve Bruce. It's very hard.
We all like scotch pie sometimes, you know?
And actually, as interesting as this book is, he still comes across as a very nice guy.
He does. That is true. We can't take that away from him.
I haven't come out of this book thinking, oh, God, what an awful. I've sort of thought, yeah, what a lovely guy.
Right. Also, so we can be fair. Everyone say something nice about Steve Bruce. Tash, get this out of the way.
He is my dream geography teacher.
That is a very nice thing to say about him. He's got a poison chalice at Newcastle and he's doing his best. He's doing his very best there.
Fair
James?
Enough.
He has respect for Lady Di. So... I think we're going to need to start
you don't
Lady
know
Di
that.
Watch.
Yeah.
He does. He mentions Lady Di.
Yeah. Oh, he does. You're right. He does.
We're going to have to start a Diana watch as well as Peter watch because she keeps popping up all the time.
Diana watch.
and Jack, nice thing about Steve Bruce.
When he smiles, he looks like a kind grandmother and it brings me a lot of joy.
Right, there we go. Now we can say anything we want. We've been kind. The floodgates have opened. Oh, also separately, I was going to mention on the front cover, Steve Bruce looks a lot like the head from Art Attack, which is something I've never noticed before in my life. But on the cover, he really does. He's got it's very Roman. Very Roman.
It's a shame there's no statues of him because he would make a great statue.
He would.
I don't think that's going to be happening.
The people of Newcastle will not make a statue
Sorry,
for
Steve.
Him.
So, as you mentioned, we love Steve Bruce. And, you know, you're meant to start a book with a bang.
I mean, look, we've read a lot of football books. We've read a lot of bad, bad, bad football books. This first chapter is probably the worst chapter we've ever read, I would say.
Steve Bruce has turned off.
I'm so sorry, Steve.
I'm not having this.
It's a remarkable decision because he has an interesting career, clearly. He's had a very interesting career. And it's clear that this book, I assume what's happened in this book is that there was an original of this book that came out in 1993.
Yeah,
this is what I assume. I don't know if this is true. There must have been an original of this book that came out in 1993 and he got to the end of it and he was like, what a great career. I'm done. And then they said, can you republish it? And we'll put a new first chapter in about 93, 94. And what Steve Bruce heard was, okay, you want me to say every single thing that happened in 93 to 1994. Got That's it. I'll put it straight in.
That's good, because that's a good point as well to set up the context, because it recaps everything. So this is Steve Bruce very much at the end of his career, captaining Manchester United, and they've just won the double.
They just won the double.
So I can kind of see, that is at the time, you know, Man United have won a treble since, and they did win a lot of things afterwards. But at that time, that was the first league title, I think, or just before they won their first league title in 25 years, and then the first double since... Oh, not many teams have done it. I know he talks about Danny Blanchflower doing it for Spurs a lot in the 60s, which I enjoyed. And that should be a really exciting chapter. But you're right, it is just match report, match report, match report.
It's amazing because he starts off by going like, I'm sad we didn't win the treble, which is such a weird way to start a book. Like, to be like, I'm sad we didn't win the treble. We won the double. Now here's every game that happened in that season. Immediately you're like, okay, fine. Like, it starts off and he's like, okay, we had our first match against Norwich. And then he goes into detail about Norwich. And I was like, okay, well, that's the first match. That's fair enough. I can understand that. You want to go into detail about the first match. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Then he goes into the next match against Sheffield United. And I was like, okay, match number two. That's interesting. An interesting decision to tell him what happened in match number two. Then we get to match number three and it's Aston Villa. And you're thinking, okay, really strap in now. Because nothing interesting is happening in these matches. It is literally like Mark Hughes scored a goal. Eric Cantona scored a goal. We had a well-attended game against Wimbledon. And it is just that for... And remember, this is back when the Premier League had 22 teams. So this is like 42 games that he just goes into horrifying detail in.
That is true.
Oh, it's so tedious.
And the final sentence of that chapter is, we were one game away from winning the treble. That would have done.
It
should have been four word chapter.
Yeah.
Right, now back to my life. Yeah. It was already quite a short book, so that would have been even nicer.
This is the interesting thing, is the book is so short, but it took me so long to read.
His references I found really difficult. Like, he's talking about a manager and the only reference point he gives is that he's like King Canute. Like, come on, mate.
Parting of the Seas. Come on. Yeah. Come on, Tash.
Yeah. I like that bit because
it wasn't a Billy Joel lyric. Come on.
King Canute, Harry Truman. I like that bit because he was like, he was a great manager, but he was no King Canute. Which is like, well,
what?
Do they all aspire to be King Canute? I'm sorry, you've come second in the LMA Manager of the Year behind King Canute, obviously, sure.
But yeah, you're right. And the book is kind of sandwiched because the whole book isn't like that either. The rest of the book isn't necessarily quite as in-depth as that. But it is sandwiched in between these two really, really, really boring chapters. Like, there's one at the beginning, and then when he goes to Manchester United again, back at the end of the book, they're just so... It really, really does list it off. I know he loves playing for Man United. He says it over and over again. You know, a bit nerdy at times, he'll be like... everyone says it's the greatest job, but I really felt it was the greatest job, and I loved it so much, and I really love Manchester United. And you do get that point, but, you know, the first bit is so boring, because at least in the second time, he talks about a bit where he almost doesn't play because he's eaten too much cheese and pickle at the pub. Like, that bit,
that's a great story.
That is a great story.
But those are the nice bits. It's all the rubbish around it, which doesn't feel like Steve Bruce either from what you know of him on
TV.
It doesn't feel like he's written it at all.
It feels very clunky. Like, there are so many like really bad sentences. Here is one of the first sentences of the book. It is, if I had my dreams like everyone else, there were times when I thought that they would be no more than that. Yeah. Just like, I mean, that sentence is like a Christopher Nolan movie. Like, you can read it one way, you can read it the next. It doesn't make any sense.
There was something I read. There was one later on where he says, "Nowadays, apprentices are given time to further their education outside football, which must be a good thing. In my time, there was nothing of the sort." Expecting him to kind of go into depth about what he got, instead he went, "I used to have to catch the 8:20 bus in the morning to get in by 9 o'clock. The next bus was not until 8:45, and that did not arrive until just after 9. What?
That bit, I genuinely, because we were all reading this on Kindle, because you can't buy this book in
But you can, because like, well, because like 30 quid.
£785.
Yeah. Imagine if you spent £785 and just had to read that.
I will tell you, actually, it costs £17.44, and I know that because my copy's turning up tomorrow.
I love the fact that you have two copies of this book now, technically.
Yeah, you're the only person who's genuinely bought this book twice.
When I read that bit with the bus times or whatever it was, I literally slammed my laptop down and I had to go for a walk. I was so angry.
The book does go into his younger life, though, after the first chapter, all the way back to the start of his career at Gillingham, which I didn't know a lot about, to be honest. Tash, I know you like this section. Why was it your favourite bit?
Because, as we've previously mentioned, this book is quite plain, I'll say, because that's a kind word, isn't it? It's quite plain.
Yeah.
And this bit was such a canvas for my imagination to run wild that I let this chapter become a sort of retelling of Vanity Fair.
Okay. Tell me more, I'm intrigued.
So imagine young Steve Bruce is our Becky Sharp, right? Becky Sharp is the protagonist of Vanity Fair.
Okay,
come on, football book club. Becky Sharp is the protagonist of Vanity Fair, and she is a social climber, notoriously. Okay. So we have young Steve Bruce. He's being paid 12 quid a week with 2 quid extra if they win a game. And he's living with Muriel and Sam Legg. And he's very homesick. And, you know, the team are doing quite well. He's catching the 8:20 buzz. He's not late every day. And he gets there and he has to clean the boots and he has to fix pipes and he's repainting roofs and he's doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then a new guy arrives. Billy Hughes.
Oh, Billy.
Good natured, wealthy, just like Emmy and Vanity Fair. And then, you know, they're both 16. Steve is watching him play and he calls him a boy wonder and he says the media are all over him. And he buys Steve all these pints in the pub and he confides all his secrets in Steve and all of his hopes and dreams. And then what? Have you ever heard of Billy Hughes, the Wonder Kid? Ever?
No.
Well, I have a theory about this, because there's one sentence in this whole book where he has any flair to his writing, and I think it's a clue as to his true feelings towards this poor man, who Billy Hughes, who's been consigned to the arsehole of history.
Is that the sentence?
He says, "It seems strange that the struggling apprentice has all his dreams fulfilled and Billy's crumbled to dust."
Yes.
Now, you tell me that that line isn't out of place in this very, very plain book. I think little Cinderella Bruce has been scrubbing the floors and washing his pints. I think this Billy has confided all of his secrets in him, and then Steve Bruce sacrificed him to the gods for his own social climbing.
Oh,
and we
word.
Only have Steve Bruce because we don't have Billy Hughes. I think he took him down from the inside, like Vanity Fair.
You're absolutely right. That is true. That is exactly what happened.
Do you think Billy Hughes was like, "Oh, make sure you do loads of headers and break your nose a lot. That's the secret. These are the secrets I can give to you."
I mean,
what secrets is Steve Bruce getting from this guy?
I don't know, but I looked at his Wikipedia page. He literally plays at Gillingham, and he's like touted. There's all of these newspaper articles about how amazing he is and how he's going to be the Wonder Kid, and then he vanishes at the same time that Steve Bruce becomes the new. I'm sorry, there's something in this.
This is something.
No book so far has merited, or definitely not included. Not definitely hasn't had a like an alternate way of interpreting the book. This is Tash is revolutionary. One of the driest books you've ever read. You've totally reinterpreted it to make a new, more exciting book.
I think my brain was like, you know when you go into one of those flotation tanks and your brain goes like off on a tangent and you start seeing things? I think that's what happened to me when I was reading this book.
He was best man at his wedding, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, which I feel like is the final final kick in the teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's some holes forming now.
That's
just the one line that he says. He never mentions him again. He goes, he was best man at my wedding.
Yeah, it was almost like as if to be like, this is the one thing I'll give you before casting you off and taking your powers.
I'm going to make you watch how expensive my wedding is.
This was my favourite segment as well, the whole thing. Because he travels in from Newcastle where he was growing up, of course, and the only place that would give him a trial was in Gillingham. So he goes all the way down to Kent from Newcastle, which is long. And the things, like, first, two things I learned. Gillingham are a really dirty club because one of his tasks is, they say, the kit was only washed once a week, even if it was caked in mud. But we had to collect it all in and hang it up around a big boiler. By the end of the week, the smell was absolutely horrendous. Of course it bloody was. They're footballers.
Why would you put it near a big boiler as well? Let's make this horrible, sweaty thing hotter. Yes,
we put a fan behind it and we wafted it around the whole club.
Welcome to Gillingham, we would say, is the smell...
But yeah, it's like, so he has to do that, he has to clean all that, and then like you mentioned, there's all these tasks that he has. So he said I sometimes wondered whether I'd become an apprentice to a laundry or a commercial cleaning company rather than a football club. He does he fixed the terraces, he paints the roof, in fact, whatever menial tasks needed to be doing, we did it. A burst pipe, like you say, he fixed. What was going on at Gillingham before Steve Bruce turned up? I really don't see who was doing any of these jobs.
And they gave him a fiver for fixing the pipe.
Yeah,
and he was like, brilliant, cool, thank you so much, delighted with that. It's also really weird because he was like, he was going to become like a trainee plumber at the Merchant Navy or something like that. Do you think Gillingham were just like, oh, we need a handyman, get him in?
Pay him YTS.
See, this is what happened. And then he went in and sat that poor fella's soul out of him, his footballing soul.
Wow. Gosh.
How old was he at this point?
Like, 16?
I
don't understand why they're just like, come fix this pipe with like no supervision. They have no experience. Just leave him to fix
it. One of their most valuable assets at the club is really promising youngster. They go, yes, get him some scalding water.
Would you mind cleaning the chimney? Just head on up there.
And he loves it. That's the thing. Steve Bruce absolutely loves it. He's like, I'm straight on it. Like, he says over and over again, he says, I must admit, I enjoyed it. Like, he loves just like cleaning these pans and stuff like that. And there's a bit later in the book where they win the league and then he wakes up in the morning and Brian Robson like does all the washing up for him. And I was just thinking, Steve Bruce is fuming right now. That's what I do. I want to clean the
damn. I was looking forward to that.
You can imagine Steve Bruce being like your granddad, though. He's like, back in my day, I had to scrub the floors for a tenner.
You think all Geordies love cleaning up after parties? Like, that's like...
And that's our question for Twitter this week. So at Footy Book Club, jump on there and ask, is cleaning just for Geordies?
Brian Robson and Steve Bruce fighting over a J-cloth.
Right, it's time this week for Out of Context, Steve Bruce. Every week, everyone comes with a line from the book, Out of Context. James, kick us off.
There is no justification for a 75-year-old being woken up in his hotel room and thrown into a prison cell for the duration of his stay in Turkey.
He's absolutely right. Absolutely right there. Can I just say, that was particularly good because there's no context for that in the book either.
That's true. That is
legitimately out of context. We have no idea what that refers to, but he just says it and you're like, okay, I agree. Right. Sure.
It's like he became like Home Secretary for a second. Yeah. Like, bring back our 75-year-old man. Jack, what was your out of context this week?
A tap on the backside was as much as I could expect from Alex Ferguson. Blue. I've finally done it.
Mine's blue, don't worry.
Yeah, mine is as well.
Tash, let's hear it.
He loves it, and I get a great deal of satisfaction from watching him at every opportunity.
That's Brian Robson cleaning up, though. So.
Yeah, he fucking loves it. And my one is, let's keep it blue. Gillingham did not win any trophies that season, but the Bruce mantelpiece was well endowed.
That is a good line.
And there'll be more Steve Bruce after the break.
Welcome along to a brand new podcast called 21st Century Football, a complete guide. Well, so far that is. This podcast is all about celebrating the best of the world's most beautiful game, but only if it happened in the 21st century. This series is all about championing the greatest footballers of the last 20 years. Each week we'll have a variety of hosts, including YouTube star Statman Dave Stephen Tries.
Got that underwear range.
You've got a pair on now, haven't you, Stephen?
No. I soiled mine this morning.
And myself, Will Brazier, will also feature radio legend Adam Brown. Find us on your regular podcasting sites, as well as our brand new YouTube channel. Search 21st Century Football.
It sound right, boy.
Welcome back to Football Book Club. Last we heard, Steve Bruce was at Gillingham, but then he got his big break at Norwich. Exciting. Everyone enjoy this bit?
Yeah.
More than the first bit.
Yep.
Yeah, it wouldn't be hard.
It started picking up, didn't it? It did start picking up.
It did.
It genuinely did. What was weird about, very quickly, about the, when he talked about Gillingham, he was like, oh, I'd played over 200 games for them. He seemed to have suddenly have played like 200, like he aged in like a page.
Yeah, I think what I didn't know about Steve Bruce was that he didn't go to United till he was, what, like 25, 26?
Yeah, he was a bit older.
He was quite older. I didn't realize that. He'd played quite a lot of games for the clubs.
He was 48 at United.
He hasn't even played for them yet.
Yeah.
He's still waiting to make his debut.
Well, talking of debuts,
he had some mad debuts. I think, obviously, I think most of us will be aware of some of the mad debuts in the modern era. Like Jonathan Woodgate's probably the classic one, isn't it?
The classic one. Own goal debut. Own goal, red card, and that was it.
Yeah, and he killed a man, I think, as well. Right at the end.
Slagged off Raul.
Steve Bruce had a hat trick of bad debuts. His debut for Gillingham.
Yep.
He got knocked out by the goalkeeper and stretched off.
That
was his first debut.
I forgot that, yeah.
Jeepers.
Then that was just his excuse to get back in and get started on the cleaning.
Yeah. I've got a mound of laundry to do.
Just one eye open on the stretcher. Yeah. And then for Norwich, he scored an own goal against Liverpool on his debut. And then finally, on his debut for Man U, it's a bit later on, but it's a trilogy, so he gave away a penalty and broke his nose. These are all on his debuts for his three professional clubs.
Yeah, it's madness. Cursed. It's in the book he laments not having it, making it, getting a cap for England, but maybe it's a good thing. Like, if he didn't get that one cap.
It could have been an international incident if he had got a cap on his debut. Awful.
That's the Norwich one is especially bad though. The scoring an own goal, then technically scoring two, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
He says it's not given to him the second one, but he does.
It comes off him. He says
it comes off him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Too honest. Didn't need to include that.
He talked about that bit when he says like, "Oh, I learnt here that you shouldn't make mistakes when you play in the first division." It's like, yeah, that makes sense, shouldn't you? You try and not make mistakes instead of making mistakes in football. Don't.
At Gillingham, I can make all the mistakes I wanted.
We were encouraged to make mistakes.
This is why he doesn't have a statue yet, isn't it?
It's true.
That's probably true.
No, Steve didn't have a particularly good time on any of his debuts, and it sort of ties into. There's a kind of pervading feeling throughout this book. There's slightly weird, like, otherworldly things happening. He has this terrible luck throughout all of his debuts, but then does really well. But also, like, at the start of the book, he's randomly talking, well, it's the start, but it's technically the end because of the, you know, terrible system that he's got with this book where he starts at the end of his career. Ugh.
We love you, Steve Bruce. We love you.
We love you, Steve Bruce. You're great. You're a lovely grandma, but still. He says to Eric Cantona, like, randomly one day, they're just, like, training before the FA Cup final. And Steve Bruce says, it was then that I turned to Eric Cantona and said, "You're going to get a penalty today." And he was like, I didn't know where it had come from. And it's like, what, Steve, what has happened? Have you been, like, possessed by a future ghost? What's happening?
Mystic Meg takes control of it.
In fairness to Eric Cantona, he just kind of goes, yeah, I'll score. And it's very like, okay, we're going to just ignore the fact that Steve Bruce can predict the future.
He's
given us a psychic reading.
He used to say all the time in training. He used to say all those kind of things always. And they were just like, it's just Steve.
But then later on, not later on, because earlier in the book, because of this terrible system, Steve's mum says that he had a she got given a letter from Steve's headmaster saying when she'd cleaned the kits, apparently they were an emerald green color, and he was like, thank you so much for cleaning these kits, I know that emerald green is probably your favorite color. Bizarre thing to say to anyone. I have no idea why he said it. So
I think it's his birthstone.
Maybe, but
I didn't
why?
Understand that bit either. And the only thing I thought is he mentioned earlier that she's Irish.
Maybe it is that. It's a weird thing to say to anyone, especially it's in a letter, clear. When you can't gauge any kind of reaction. But he said, thank you for cleaning these kits. I'm sure you liked it because they were green, because you're Irish, apparently. But when he's playing for Manchester United, you won't need to clean the kits anymore. And Steve's like, did he know? Did he have a psychic reading? Did he know that I play for Manchester United? Was he just picking a random big club out of the air? I don't know. Ooh.
Yeah, it's not that mystic, is it, really? He just picked out a big club out of the air. That was it.
It's pretty mystic. It's sort of, it's like, it's unsettling. In a book that is very, very plain, anything that's, it's like in Paranormal Activity. The bits that are scary in Paranormal Activity aren't when, like, you know, weird stuff happens.
Steve Bruce is playing for Gillingham. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It's the bit where Steve Bruce's mum starts washing kits. Yeah, that's the bit that I found very scary. And then there's another bit later on when Steve Bruce is about to, he's moving from Norwich to Manchester United, and the game that he was supposed to play in before the transfer to Manchester United, the player that replaced him, the new number four, gets his leg broken and like never plays again. And Steve Bruce kind of like refers to it as almost like this Final Destination thing, where he was like, that should have been me. I should have been the player who got his leg broken just then. Oh my God. Like,
he thought it was karma coming back at him for Billy.
For sucking the life out of Billy.
Billy's the one who's like, it could have been me. Like, for the rest of his life. What was he called? Billy Phillips.
Turned into dust. Who cares? He's not big now.
Billy Hughes.
Poor Billy Hughes.
Remember the name. God, poor Billy Hughes. I feel like in a podcast that promised just to be us ripping the piss out of Steve Bruce, now we're just destroying Billy Hughes.
I looked him up on Facebook and couldn't find him, so I don't think he'll be... Facebook? I don't know if he's still knocking around.
He's probably running a very successful laundry company.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about his family, but specifically... Janet. So we don't get to know too much about Janet. You get enough to get a sense that they're like a little team. They're really nice to get, like, you just get the impression they're like a little team who make decisions together. They're really supportive of each other. They both come across really well. He mentions Janet 25 times.
Just in case. Janet's not his assistant manager.
Janet is, of course, his imaginary friend.
A 7-foot rabbit who tells him the world's going to end.
He mentions Janet.
Got up market, Donnie Darko now, I think.
He mentions her 25 times in this book, which...
Wow, that's good for a footballer.
Yeah, so they met at school. That was another sweet part. They're like high school sweethearts. They were both into sport, in the sports teams. And apart from that, all you get to learn about is that she calls him an idiot when he gets injured. Shouts at him.
That is
like a really, he's getting stretched off and she's just shouting at him, calling
him
an idiot.
That's so funny, that bit. He gets like horribly injured and they're planning to move from Gillingham to another club, and he gets awfully injured and she just runs up to him and is like, what you done that for?
she says, you stupid idiot, what did you go and do a thing like that for? And then he calls her a good honest Geordie woman.
Like, I really sympathise with her though, because when my boyfriend last October broke five bones playing football 25 minutes in, we were supposed to be going on holiday the next week, and I called him every name under the sun, so I totally sympathise with Janet there. It's like, yes, your leg's mangled, but are you going to be back out by Tuesday so we can go to Egypt?
And Tom's autobiography says that she's just a good honest woman from Stoke. Yeah.
There's a really funny bit where he makes it sound like the shock of his own goal sent Janet into early labour.
Yes! What? I didn't miss that bit. Is this when she gives birth to Alex Bruce?
Yeah, it's Alex. But when you actually go back, he'd already said that she was about 7 months pregnant before he'd even signed for Norwich. So I think it was just a pretty normal birth. Like, he's just... He thinks that he's like, I scored a goal that shocked Janet so much that, bang, 2 months later, our son popped out. Like... Was it linked?
2 months later.
2 months later.
Footballers and their knowledge of gynecology gets worse with every reading.
That is very true.
Imagine being in a state of shock that you could give birth for 2 months. Yeah. The intensity of the shock you would have to feel.
How big is Alex Bruce as a baby?
Also, you touched upon it earlier, but there's that bit where him and Janet just go and get pissed, and then he has to play a game unexpectedly. So,
he eats cheese and pickles.
He's got a hernia operation booked in for the following day, so he's not meant to be playing. So he goes, him and Janet go shopping and for a pub lunch, and they eat loads of cheese and pickles, and they're like really stuffed, and they probably had some pints as well, I'm sure. And then Alex Ferguson asks him if he can play, so he has to play the game with a hernia and a belly full of cheese and pickles.
They don't make them like they used to, do they?
Definitely they don't.
Not. Do you think if Gary Pallister had been injured, he'd have asked Janet to play as well?
There's quite a sad bit at the end with his wife, though. I thought, literally right at the end, he says how it's difficult for the children at school. They want to be ordinary kids. But Alex gets taken the mick out of being Steve Bruce's son. Or they're like, they always associate him as Steve Bruce's son. And Janet is always Steve Bruce's wife. And as he says, seldom as a person in her own right. And he really wants that to be the case. I thought that was very sweet and
sad.
Nice. That bit, yeah.
I thought it was nice that he talked about that, though, because he's sort of like highlighting the difficulties of being in a family with a famous footballer, and he's sort of saying she's her own person in her own right, like people need to respect that. So that's nice that he points that out.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's kind of ahead of its time in looking at Janet. Yeah. If you look at some other books that we've read of this time, the misogyny
much
is rife.
Or much later very, as well.
Or much later, yeah. Actually, yeah. he speaks very lovingly of Janet.
Especially it's when they're true. Such, they just seem like a really nice couple. You mentioned it earlier, but when when Brian Robson comes around and he cleans the kitchen, basically, this is when Steve and Janet host a party because they've won the league, right? I think that's when it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's through another game that they're not involved. So it's Alderman Villa, I think, and that's what decides them winning the league. So then people like Man U players just start turning up at their house. Who comes?
Schmeichel lives like right down the
Schmeichel and Paul Ince and Brian Robson and his wife, and they have like a little party there, and everyone goes home, but Brian Robson and his wife Denise end up staying over, and then they got up at 7 a.m. to tidy and wash the kitchen floor, and all I could think was, there's absolutely no way Jermaine Pennant or Darren Huckabee would be up at 7 a.m. cleaning that kitchen. They'd be like putting shaving foam on Janet's head and like blasting an air horn, filming it. There's no way they'd be doing that. I thought that was really nice.
It was sweet.
It's true.
Lovely. It sort of made me think they're all just lovely old men having a nice time together, aren't they?
And obviously, Steve Bruce made his name at Manchester United, where he had the best time of his career. But the more interesting thing I found about this section is, and we've just touched upon it before in episodes, how he's kind of there at United in this changing world of football. He's at this point where football, the Premier League has just started in 92, 93, I think that was the first season, right? Agents are coming in and there's money being thrown around and stuff like that. And he says football's becoming, entertainment at some point. And at one point he says something like, top class sport nowadays on the fringe of show business. Some sports, such as boxing, have moved what I regard as being dangerously close to the entertainment industry. I love that there's Steve Bruce watching a match, watching Mike Tyson v Evander Holyfield, and go, is this the Sopranos? I don't understand. What am I watching? Sport? I don't get it.
Or the idea that like midway through a football match that gets too exciting, he's like, nope, shut it down. It's too exciting. Yeah. This is too entertaining. I'm sorry.
But that's really interesting, because also earlier on he mentions how he was on the same pitch at some points in his career, early in his career, as Alan Ball and Martin Peters, who won the World Cup, which I couldn't believe, to be honest. That was, so that they won the World Cup in 66, and he was playing with them maybe late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. So right at the end of their career, and right at the beginning of Steve Bruce's, and they kind of passed like ships in the night. And I found that really interesting.
It was fascinating, but it was at the end of a book that was not fascinating.
Yeah, that is the drawback.
It was a little bit like at the end of a lecture that has been incredibly dull. The last 5 minutes, suddenly they go like, perhaps there are aliens. And you're like, what? Oh, wait, what?
Or they put some clip art on the screen. Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you're a fun, interesting person. But I've just spent the last like hour, like barely able to keep my eyes open. And I mean that with the best one in the world with Steve Bruce, because he is a lovely guy and we've talked about how lovely he is. But I think this stuff at the end with Janet and with, you know, like, what does it mean for sport? Where is sport going? Some really interesting things. But by that time, I was just like watching the ticker of the book come towards an end. Come on. Like, genuinely, Steve Bruce could have put in like a communist manifesto right at the end. And I don't think anyone would have read it because they'd have been so like stultified.
Well, right. Okay. You've brought me on very nicely to this week's dramatic reading because I know a lot of us because we have a WhatsApp group, as you mentioned a few times, and people... You guys were struggling. I saw from afar. However, I knew you hadn't reached one section yet because there was one bit which blew my mind and I knew that it would be something which we were all going to talk about. So it's time for this week's dramatic reading. Can someone cue the dramatic music, please?
I think this might be the most dramatic reading.
It genuinely is dramatic.
That's true. It might be.
It really is. It might be the
maybe
best thing.
Maybe it's because it comes out of nowhere, but it is.
Can someone cue the dramatic music?
I think, James, it should be you.
Cue dramatic... music, and it involves Janet.
It does involve
you.
Janet.
Give away
Janet.
A little hint. This week's dramatic reading is called Steve Bruce, Master Criminal. This is not the first time that I'd found myself in court. Oh yeah, so we should probably give a bit of context. At this point, he's having a bit of a dealing with his first agent who doesn't deal very well with him, so he goes to court with him.
Yep. Very quickly, the court case is still ongoing in the book, so he has to be like, I can't
talk about
it. Might
still be ongoing now.
It probably is.
27 years later.
But it's so weird how he's like, I have a lot of stuff to say about this, but I can't because it's still ongoing. Like,
wait for heading for victory too.
Wait to write your book, man. Next, just, yeah.
That's very true. Anyway, this is not the first time I found myself in court. Exciting. I have to admit that in my early days with Gillingham, I managed to become the subject of headlines on both the front and back pages of the same edition of the local paper. Okay. I get what he means, right? Okay, I'm with you. I'm an idiot.
This is like 90% of reading this book is, what? Huh? Oh, okay, yeah. I guess that makes sense. Okay.
On the front, the back, and in the middle. During my initial season in the first team, I used to telephone Janet every day. There we go, Janet fans. She's already appeared. Her family was not on the phone at the time, so we arranged for her to be in a cool box at a great time for me to ring her there. It's like he's having like an affair with a spy. It's really exciting. I did not like to use my landlady's telephone box where I would have run up a frightening bill, so I went out to a cool box. On one occasion, I had only a couple of coins available, so when they ran out, I tried reversing the charges to Janet's box. Smart. It worked, so whenever I was a little short of cash, I used the same trick. Nothing.
That is genius, by the way.
Yeah, very clever.
That is such a clever idea.
I told you, a smart footballer.
You have to take your hat off to him. Like, it's illegal.
It became something of a habit, to the extent that the authorities had caught on to what was happening. We got him.
The feds.
Yeah, the feds were watching. The practice was more widespread than I realised because someone locally had been using a similar dodge to make calls to a box in Sunderland. Determined to find the culprit, the exchange was listed.
I really want to know who that was. Was it Niall Quinn and his girlfriend? Or?
Determined to find the culprit, the exchange was listing into reverse call charges from Gillingham to the northeast. What are the chances of that? To get a clue about who was making all these calls. One day I was calling Janet about being sent off during a game against Swindon, and it did not take Sherlock Holmes to deduce from the newspaper reports the next day who had been making the call.
I love that idea. There's someone listening in being like, we got him. He got sent off against Swindon. We know who it is.
When I came to make my next call, the trap had been set. Wow. I reversed the charges, and while we were chatting, I heard sirens in the distance. It's amazing. It's like something in a Hollywood movie, like the sting at the end of the
sirens.
Film.
Sirens.
Yeah. I remarked
phone
that there
booth.
Must. Yeah, exactly. Phone booth.
It is phone booth.
I remarked there must be a fire or something in the area, and carried on talking. The sirens came closer and closer, and before I realised what was happening, four police cars and a van roared up outside my telephone box. There was a moment of horrid realisation that I was the target of the manhunt. I just had time to scream to Janet, run, run, they've caught us, before I was next. Run, run, they've caught us.
That is the single greatest line that Steve Bruce has
run, ever. Janet, run. That's the new Run Forest Run.
Also, the idea that you would shout that down the phone as the police, as the police are coming up to you.
If you ever get like budget to do any reenactments,
definitely
that's
do.
The scene that I really want to do.
That's, I mean, to be honest, Steve Bruce might have some free time soon, so he'll probably be able to do it.
Hey.
Sorry. Keep him in the job.
Why does she need to run? He's just like, Janet, flush the stash. I'll be in touch.
It sounds, for fundamentally what is the mildest crime that has ever existed, screaming, run, Janet, they've caught us, is the most incriminating thing you can say.
They're like Bonnie and Clyde. I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit excessive to send so many policemen to apprehend someone for making an illegal phone call costing only £50. But that was before that I knew someone was doing the same thing in Sunderland, running up bills of unimaginable proportions.
Nigel!
Then,
yeah,
then me and Janet drove off the edge of a cliff holding each other's hand.
Oh, it's so good.
Incredible. That is the best dramatic reading I think we've had. Yeah. Genuinely dramatic.
Easily.
And exciting. Run, Janet, run! And then the book ends with some tributes from players, coaches. We haven't had that too much, which is quite nice. People he's played with in his career.
It does end with that, but it also it's the ghostwriter like writing.
Yeah, that's
it.
True. And basically telling the story of the whole book again, but with some quotes. It's quite nice in some ways, though, because like people say all the things they thought of him. And Jerry Summers, his manager at Gillingham, says, oh, you know, he's a good player. And the toilets have never looked the same way since. But in general, did this book change you? Everyone, did you enjoy it? I won't ask that. Did it change you? Let's go back to that one.
Fundamentally, no. I can't say it changed me.
No.
I usually try and look for a reason as to why it would change me, but it hasn't changed me.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it changed me. I liked that it ended on him saying that he wanted to be a manager, and he is now, kind of.
he is a manager.
Don't have the kind of.
Technically, and I suppose one could say he is a manager. Yeah.
Newcastle fans might not.
We don't know what it will be like when this comes out, you know?
That's true.
But, you know, and he has. We haven't mentioned this, so I won't go into it in too much detail, but he also runs a greetings card shop in Prestatyn.
Oh my gosh.
We can't.
I feel like
first of all, you've ruined a question in the quiz, but you're absolutely right. Yeah.
We need to start some sort of tally of weird businesses that footballers have outside of football.
I totally agree.
Like Cammy's off license.
Yeah, alongside Cammy's off license.
The lasting legacy that this book had for me was I was like, I want to know what this shop is. Like, what was it called and where?
Yeah.
You know, what sort of thing did it sell? So I looked it up. Doesn't exist.
It's closed down.
I thought you were going to say.
And guess what I think it is now? A Sports Direct.
Wow.
I think it's come full circle and Mike Ashley's owns his soul.
But that is it's a greetings card shop in Prestatyn in North Wales.
Yeah.
I don't know how you pronounce that, but that's where it is. And yeah, Prestatyn. I agree.
Prestatyn. So you got,
all right, go, you know how to say things. You wouldn't listen to Vanity Fair. You get Billy Joel tattooed in yourselves. I don't care. Just because you're not better than me.
No, right. I used to go on caravan holidays in Prestatyn. That's why I know. I reckon I've been in Steve Bruce's shop once upon a time.
Yeah. I need to get a sorry for getting this tattoo, mum. Yeah. Card.
James, rating out of 10.
Oh, I feel so conflicted because it was awful, but the dramatic reading was great and I just really like him. So I'm going to just go with a 5.
Okay. That's unusually nice for you, James, given how you are on this show, how ruthless you can be. But thank you for doing it. Jack?
3.
Okay. Ruthless. Tash?
3.5. And the 0.5 is for being so bland that I was able to project my own thriller onto it.
Don't make me work out.
He's a lovely guy.
I've got to do the maths in my head. Now there's 0.5s in there. Oh, no. Okay. I'm going to give it a 0.5 to fix it. No, it's okay. I'll give it a 4.5 to fix it. I'm going to give it 4.5 because it was dull, but some of the memories will live with me forever. That is what I've got from it.
The dramatic reading brought it from 3 to 5 for me, I think.
It got 16 overall, which is a 4, and it is very, very much the bottom. That's below the Nevilles at 5.75. Sorry, Steve, we love you, but it wasn't your best book.
We do love you.
We do love you. That's the important thing. For the quiz this week, you're all named after odd jobs Steve Bruce had while at Gillingham. So, Tash, your dishwasher, Jack, your plumber, and James, your dirty laundry washer. Good? Happy with that? Remember to shout your name out as you're done. So, question one, which fellow Geordie legend did Steve Bruce go on trial with at Gillingham?
Dirty laundry washer Peter Beardsley.
Is correct.
Well,
very
played.
Good. Very good dirty laundry washer. That was really interesting, that bit.
That was interesting.
Again.
No, that was an interesting fact. Was an interesting bet.
Yeah, it did go. You're right. Question two. How many goals did Steve Bruce score from defence in 1990/91 season?
Dirty laundry washer.
Okay.
Oh,
wow.
It's an ABC.
No.
No. Give me.
If you know this, go.
I think it's 19.
You're correct again. I was going to say A5, B12, C19. Jack is fuming. He usually runs away with this.
to be fair, I'm just happy to have not have this book in my brain anymore. So
he was a right little Sergio Ramos, wasn't he?
He was
very impressive. He took penalties, but 19 goals a lot in one
19
season.
19 goals is so many.
He actually those 19 goals he scored. I could break it down if you want. He scored 11 penalties.
No, please don't. Please don't. Please. Oh God, I'm back in the book. I'm reading the book again. Oh God.
We're witnessing greatness here, James. This is incredible. James is recalling of this. Question number three. What is one of Steve Bruce's all-time ambitions? Outside football.
Hmm. Oh, I know. Dishwasher. He wants to go and watch the cricket in the West Indies.
Very good. He wants to follow the England cricket team on a tour of the West Indies. Very good, Dishwasher. That sounds really sexist when I say
that. Don't like that.
Should have thought this through.
Not very Steve Bruce of you.
Yeah, I know. It's awful. Very bad. That's the end of the quiz. Plumber, you got nothing.
God,
Dishwasher,
I'm
you got
on
one.
The board.
I know.
I got nothing.
Running away with it is Dirty Laundry Washer. Well done, James.
Well played, Dirty Laundry Washer.
Very well deserved. Right, as your treat, James, for winning, what would you like the most in the world? Would it be a Ken Zong by any chance?
Yes, please.
Thank God you said that, because I've got nothing else prepared. Time for this week's Ken Zong. So far this series, you've had Michael Dubridge, the tune of Dub Be Good To Me, and last week we had a whole tribute to David Weta, to the Monkees' I'm A Believer. That was great. This week, to the tune of Smash Mouth's All Star.
It's got
a lot to live up to. Hey now, Jesper Gronkja, get your boots on, go play. Hey now, Jesper Gronkja, put a show on today. All he touches is balls. He's the big tall Dane who scores the goals. I don't know why you couldn't just say gold. I don't know why you're putting balls in there.
Balls, yeah. All he touches is balls is not a phrase I ever want to hear coming out of Ken Zong's mouth.
Out of context, Ken Zong.
Yeah. Ah, oh, great.
Somebody said to me, they thought this whole time, the three series that we've done, that Ken Zong is just James playing a character.
What?
Playing a character called Ken Zong. It just slightly changes his voice, which would mean he'd have to stage phone calls with himself.
Yeah, he's been on the show. Oh,
that was really so funny.
Ken Zong exists.
That's so good.
He's going to be so
offended. Like the end of Fight Club, isn't it?
Do other people think that? Does anyone else listening message you? I promise you, Ken Zong's real. We have to get one.
I've
Instagram
never
live
met
next
Ken,
week.
So you know.
That's true. That is unbelievable. Though Ken Zong does exist, and be back again this time next week. Also next week, we're reading another book. I bet no one has ever read, and I genuinely mean this one. West Ham vice chairman Karen Brady's Brady Plays the Blues: A Diary of Her Time at Birmingham, and it has quite the cover. We're all very, very excited by it. Tash, you look fuming.
A dog just jumped on my head. Sorry. You missed his cameo appearance.
Yeah, it was great. It was a great couple of seconds.
If you've read that, which I think is very unlikely, or any book we've read, Steve Bruce's book, any of the books we read this series, or you plan on reading any of them, do get in touch. Get in touch with us about anything, any questions, any footballer author, puns which you had at the beginning. You can find us on Twitter at Footy Book Club, Instagram at Football Book Club, or on Facebook. Also, make sure you listen to our podcast friends, 21st Century Football, available on all podcasting platforms. It's a great listen. Check it out. Guys, any last words?
Run, Janet!
It had to be. Run, Janet, run! Goodbye.
They're on to us!
Bye!
Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Natasha Daniels, James Baljan, and Jack Bernhardt. It was created by James Bug, and it's a Crowd Network production. Thanks to Steve for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Steve Bruce has gone on to enjoy a successful managerial career, taking him to teams including Hull, Wigan, and Newcastle, where his constant references to King Canute in team talks goes down like a lead balloon. Billy Hughes played 126 games for Gillingham and then just 10 more for Palace and Wimbledon before apparently disappearing into thin air. Very suspicious, Steve. Janet has been on the run for that reverse call charge since the late 80s, but occasionally meets up with Steve in disguise at various greasy spoons around the northeast. Brian Robson still pots round to the Bruces to wash up a few glasses every now and then, and Gillingham replaced Steve Bruce with a washing machine. The music Hills Behind is the work of Silent Partner and is used in a Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back next week with Karen Brady Plays the Blues. We can't wait. See you then.